podcast. Justin Goodhart bringing you just the most hard-hitting sports analytical talk that you'll find here in the 21st century alongside his partner in crime, his colleague from Shippensburg University, Cameron Klein, as he sits in the loft, or at least in the home of the FGP Studios. Maybe not necessarily the loft. It is getting a little bit colder out there, people. Cameron, how are you doing on this fine Wednesday afternoon?
I'm good, dude. Could be better. Could be better with the Dolphins loss over the weekend. But I'm pretty good. Yeah. And yeah, I could be up there. I could be up in the loft. I just forgot to put the heater on earlier today. So I was just like,
I got you.
Yeah, I got out of the shower. I was like, that's whatever. I'll just do it in the bedroom for now. But I'm good, dude. Other than that, can't complain. Going to Los Angeles tomorrow.
Yes, yes, tomorrow. And how long are you in LA for? When are you guys coming home?
Monday. We're just going in for the Dolphins game.
So the day after the game. I got you.
Which was, it's cool. It was flexed to a night game. That's kind of fun. It's my third night game I've been to. I saw Miami play Carolina on Thursday night football a couple years ago. Ricky Williams ran all over the Panthers. That was fun. And then I saw the Saints my senior year of high school on Monday Night Football. Both teams were 3-0, the Dolphins and the Saints. And Miami was not 3-0 after that. It was like a 33-10 shellacking. Drew Brees murdered us. It was insane. It was awesome, though. It was a great town. Everyone's cool. Stadium was great. Got to see Drew Brees play in the flesh. Can't complain about it. So, yeah, I'm excited. It's going to be a good weekend.
I've been to two night games. My first night game was the home opener after the Eagles had won the Super Bowl, the 2018 opener against the Atlanta Falcons. And then the other night game was last year, was when they played on Tuesday night against the Washington football team and beat them 27-17. It was a decent game. I remember being cold, but I remember thinking we're winning, so you know, all good.
Yeah.
We start off some news that you kind of had said you wanted to kind of go into before we went into anything else, and I think it's kind of important that we talk about it because of what he had meant to the Philadelphia Flyers. Cameron, you have news, or at least have read up on the news about Jake Voracek.
Yeah, so Jake Voracek, it's a big gray area right now, kind of like a Ryan Ellis situation for us to be comparable. But he is contemplating his career as a hockey player at the moment. He suffered another head injury in November. And he and Kevin Hayes were kind of going back and forth because they became good friends during his time here, when Kevin Hayes first came here and spent his time with Jake Voracek. And, so they kind of relayed the message that Jake is, battling to try to come back. He doesn't think he's going to play the rest of the season. And he's saying that, you know, this is his seventh or eighth concussion of his career, and you know, he's got to start thinking about his future life and his quality of life moving forward, and he might not ever play again, which would be a shame because he's a great hockey player, and I think he was very underappreciated here in Philadelphia, and it'd be sad to see him go out like that. But
Jake Voracek was one of my favorite players. I thought that he was a very reliable piece on a Flyers team that really should have done more when both he and Claude Giroux were in town. Those were the two proverbial faces of the franchise for a little while. It was Jake Voracek and Claude Giroux. Voracek was known as, you know, we asked him to shoot a lot more than he actually did. He was an assister. You know, that's what he did.
Yeah. I think he kind of fell victim to that, to a team that wasn't built around him or Giroux's strength as well. They kind of just relied on them rather than built around them. So I kind of don't think it was fair for him.
And I think one of the biggest microcosms of his career was when we went to that Devils-Flyers game in 2019, and he was on the doorstep of a goal and just pinged it off the post, even though it was just a slam dunk opportunity. And then what happens? They congratulate him on 900 games. And it's just like, oh my God, you couldn't have picked a worse time to have that come up.
It was and for those like that don't know, for people that have, you know, done some stuff in sports media, some stuff in announcing and so on and so forth, that kind of stuff is pre-planned, right? Like they weren't planning on like, let's wait till he misses on a slam dunk opportunity to say congratulate him. It was like, all right, during this whatever, at some point in the second period, during the second stoppage in play, that's when we're gonna do it. And that happened to be right after when
Yeah, but you know, I've often said when it comes to media, when it comes to like, you know, especially like, you know, if you work in Flyers PR, if you work in any team's PR, you're basically in a, it's comparable to a college's sports info page, you got to be able to adjust a little bit, in my opinion, and maybe, just maybe. You know what? Let's wait till the intermission. Then we'll thank Cenk Voracek for his 900 games of service, and people will be in the concession stands, and they won't boo as heavily. It was unfortunate, but it really was a microcosm. And you mentioned underrated, and that also kind of lends to why it was such a microcosm, because Cenk Voracek was such a steady piece of the Flyers from 2012 until 2020. Just, he was always there. You know, he didn't really miss any games. He was a huge part of some really big playoff moments, I would say, for this Philadelphia team. He was a big part. He scored the game-winning goal in Game 1 against the Penguins in the 2012 opener. He had really, really, really good moments against the Montreal Canadiens in that playoff series in 2020. And ultimately, he was a guy that you could rely on for, you know, to have a big assist in a game that the Flyers would need to get. It's unfortunate that him, and I hate to say it, but Giroux's time in here will be remembered as the Philadelphia teams that never really got anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. He's another victim of that, which is a which is a shame. He, you know, you can add him to the long list of good Flyers who unfortunately just fell short for whatever reason, especially reasons that probably I would say, at least in Jake's situation, aren't his own fault. So it is what it is. I hope no matter what he chooses, whether he chooses to play again or not, you know, I hope his quality of life is what he's thinking about the most. And I hope whatever decision he makes is the thing that, that makes that the best. So shout out to you, Jake.
Wishing you the best, Jake.
From a couple of fucking weasels, you know. Shout out from a couple weasels.
From a couple weasels in the media, in the amateur media. And before we move on to other things that we have planned to talk about, let's quickly break down the Philadelphia Phillies. Just about a month removed from losing the World Series to the Houston Astros in six games. Dave Dombrowski was at the winter meetings, and Dave said, well, I was given an open checkbook. And on the first day of winter meetings, they bring home Trey Turner, 11 years, $300 million, $27.5 million a year. If you do the math, him and Bryson Stott as an infield combo still cost less than Gene Segura and Didi Gregorius. So that's a little fun fact in there. Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
That's nuts.
Trey Turner has been announced that he will wear number 7, as he did with the Washington Nationals and the Los Angeles Dodgers. He's 29 years old, and he's Bryce Harper's best friend, apparently. So this is pretty awesome. Trey Turner, best shortstop in baseball. He's coming to Philadelphia. The Phillies' offense even looks even more loaded now than it did last year.
Yeah, and like you can obviously thank Dave Dombrowski for getting the deal done, but this is something I've been saying for as praising Bryce Harper for the past over a year, is that, you know, obviously he's an MVP candidate every game, basically. I mean, he's unbelievably good. But the other big thing is that he's building this team. Like, he's playing an incredibly well-recruiting role for the Philadelphia Phillies right now, bringing in winners, people who want to win. And this is something we kind of saw coming ever since he was wearing that beautiful burgundy suit last year when he was in the booth. And he was there. They asked him, like, oh, well, who's your favorite player? He was like, probably Trey Turner. And I remember as soon as that happened, like, all over Twitter, it was just like, he's going to be a Philly next year, Trey Turner. And sure enough, here he is. So, yeah, it's nice.
So, you know, it's funny. And I'll tell you what, Cameron, we're going to have to tell you what, more nights at the ballpark for you and I are coming up in the future. Because that team's going to be fun to watch. But what I was going to ask you is, Philadelphia in baseball has all of a sudden become a destination city. People want to come here.
Yeah.
Kyle Schwarber, Nick Castellanos, Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, JT Realmuto, Zach Wheeler, all these guys have wanted to come here. What does that say to you about the culture that exists with the Philadelphia Phillies?
Well, it's a culture of people who want to win. I mean, it's obviously Bryce Harper's he's a fucking winner. I don't really think I have to go, you know, to beyond that. And a lot of people give him crap, but Nick Castellanos is another guy that's like that. I think one of the reasons he kind of struggled throughout the year is that he strikes me as a guy, and I get this from his interviews and even from before he was a Philly, that guy puts a lot of pressure on himself to win. I remember there's that infamous video of him. I want to see what's with the Cincinnati Reds, and he's just sitting there at the podium, and he's just going, I fucking hate losing. I fucking hate it. Like a serial killer. So yeah, so I just think, you
I
know,
mean, yeah.
If you have a bunch of guys in a room that all kind of had the same general mindset, why wouldn't you want to take your skill set there? Obviously, you know, it kind of just lends itself to common sense, to be
honest.
A lot
of us had been saying that when the Phillies got back to the playoffs, if they were given the chance to have a home game, then a lot of people would see just, you know, how much the fans would come out. And that's long been a big time, like, arguing point that I think was kind of lost amongst all of this. You don't think when Bryce Harper hit that home run against the Padres in Game 5 and they had all the camera shots and they showed the fans' reactions and how the fans were throughout the entire playoffs for the Phillies, I'm sure Trey Turner was sitting down watching those games and thinking, yeah, I want to go there. I want to go be a bit part of some big moments at that stadium because that's just awesome. The Citizens Bank Park is one of the hardest places to win in October. The Phillies have proven that when you go through what their playoff record at home is from 2007 until this most recent season. They're very, very hard to beat at home. Trey Turner sees the madness, sees how awesome it is, sees that you can develop a true legacy, I think, in Philadelphia, and it was just it just made the decision all the easier. Not, you know, Bryce Harper said when he got to Philadelphia, he wanted to have players come here. There was talks that Mike Trout might have been a part of that at the time. But he has held up his end of the bargain. He has been a great player, borderline Hall of Fame-esque player in Philadelphia. He helped get the Phillies back to the World Series. And, more importantly, he is recruiting great talent to come here so that way we can stay as a formidable, challenging opponent for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years at least.
Yeah, I like how you ended it on that point because, like, every athlete, obviously they exude confidence. You have to have an extreme level of confidence to be able to reach to that level because you have to believe in yourself to some extent that you're that good and you can challenge yourself to that level. And so obviously, like you were saying, you saw what happened last year and he's looking at himself thinking, like, I could be the guy that can push this over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty damn cool.
Absolutely.
That adds to your legacy. You're also getting paid $300 million like while you're doing it. That's also pretty cool. But the thing is, like,
it's pretty cool.
He was gonna get offered that pretty much anywhere he went for the most part, right? Like that was the asking price for a guy like that. So it's like, okay, if I have to weed through my options, this place seems the most fun and a high chance of me winning. Plus, it's also offering me that much money. Why would I say no to that? And I get to play with one of my best friends.
And the news coming out today that he left $41 million on the table on an offer from the San Diego Padres. So that's what's in.
Sucks
for the Padres. And then the Phillies were not done. They signed a starting pitcher who had played recently for the New York Mets, Taijuan Walker, who was very, very good throughout the first half of the season, had some injury bug issues, but still a 3.86 ERA in 2021. Figure that he can replace the Zach Eflin hole that was up behind as Zach Eflin went on to sign with the Tampa Bay Rays. And then just this morning, Philadelphia was like, well, we're not done yet. We realized that bullpen of ours needs to be a little bit better, so they bring in another left-handed thrower, which I thought was a really, really important thing. They bring over from the Boston Red Sox, Matt Strom, who was decent. He wasn't bad. He was fine. He was not a bad pitcher.
I didn't even see that. Huh.
Yep. 2 years, $15 million from Matt Strom.
Okay.
And so right now, I don't know if the Phillies are done spending just yet. I would think that as far as big-time acquisitions go, they're probably done. You probably won't see a big-time splash from this point on because if they're not over the luxury tax, they're pretty much right at it. So, but that's what your 2023 Philadelphia Phillies are looking like right now. And you have Andrew Painter, the star prospect for the Phillies that is on the rise and could make his debut as soon as this year. You have other guys that can fill out that fifth rotation spot. You have Bailey Falter. And your bullpen now looks a little bit stronger. Jose Alvarado, Matt Strom, Sir Anthony Dominguez. They're not bringing back Corey Knebel or David Robertson, so they'll have to figure out those two holes right there. But this team right now looks to be – we'll see. You know what? We'll see. Offense, if nothing else, offense should be very fun this year.
Yeah, I mean, it was this year, too, right?
Like it was very fun this year.
And I don't know much about batting orders. Like, I don't know entirely as much of the importance of that because, again, I'm fresh to baseball. But I do understand that Trey Turner most likely will be leading off, which means Schwarber won't be. So apparently people are, you know, happy about that.
When Harper is healthy, I would think it's going to be Trey Turner, and then it'll probably be you want your second hitter to be one of your better contact hitters. And I thought the way that Alec Bohm played this year, he was doing a lot better job making contact. So probably Turner, Bohm, Realmuto, Harper, and then you probably go Schwarber, Hoskins, Castellanos, Stott, Brandon Marsh.
Damn,
that is a damn good lineup.
That's
right there.
That's you heard it here first. And so you brought the Mets to a point. Let me just say, I think Justin Verlander fits there because he looks like a Met. Like, he looks like a dude from Long Island.
He does look like a New York Met, yeah.
Like, he looks like a dude who owns his own landscaping business. Like, he doesn't deserve, like, not that he doesn't deserve, he doesn't look like he deserves to be anywhere near a baseball field, anywhere near a supermodel wife, right? He looks like he should be wearing some high-vis shirt somewhere, working on a job site with me. That's where he should be.
Apparently, the Yankees offered him more, but then his wife, Kate Upton, said that, you know, we didn't want to go where he might be booed, which is like, all right, that's fitting. You know, you're going to you act as if you could never be booed by the New York Mets fans. You
well,
act as if they just they hold their players accountable over there, too. I'm pretty sure Francisco Lindor got booed his ass off his first year in New York because he wasn't playing that well. Neither here nor there. Good for Justin Verlander. That's really cute. It was adorable. You know, oh, my God, they got Justin Verlander. We just signed Trey Turner. So fuck off.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, so what's going on with Aaron Judge? The Yankees, they haven't signed him yet, right? Like,
so, the news did break today. Aaron Judge has returned to the New York Yankees on a 9-year, $360 million deal. Poor John Heyman. His reputation has been eviscerated after tweeting out that he was heading to the San Francisco Giants. And then he had to come like, oh, dude. Sorry, they actually didn't hear from him. My bad. And then he signs with the Yankees. So, John Heyman's reputation, rest in peace.
Yeah.
God bless.
I mean, dude, like,
and for
if you're Aaron Judge, man, like, the Yankees, like, sure, like, the Giants might pay you more, blah, 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 but, like, I hate to say it, and I'm not saying because I like it this way or that it should be this way, but the Yankees are the Yankees. Like,
I mean,
like, the
it
overall
feels like Aaron Judge.
The brand.
It just didn't make sense to me. It didn't make sense to me the idea that Aaron Judge wasn't going to be a New York Yankee. He is.
Oh, yeah.
He's the face of that franchise. He is a New York Yankee through and through.
And it's just like,
fact,
dude, the branding of the New York Yankee, how much he can add his own brand, build onto his own brand with that New York media market. It's insane. You're going to make way more money doing that than you are probably from your contract.
It is amazing to think, though, that the San Francisco Giants, they've struck out now on guys like Juan Soto, Bryce Harper, and now Aaron Judge. I don't know what it is about San Francisco that makes them so undesirable, but what I think it has something to do with, one, San Francisco, very expensive area to live in. The taxes are insane.
And I hear it's not a very nice city.
It's a fine city to visit. Like, I visited San Francisco, and I didn't have any problems in San Francisco. I do remember distinctly telling my mother I would never want to live here.
Never want
to live here. But, I mean, like, it's New York. New York is the bright lights. It's the biggest, most famous city in the world.
Dude, the history, Babe Ruth. Like, dude, Derek Jeter.
Babe Ruth,
Aaron,
Joe DiMaggio, Derek Jeter, A-Rod, Mickey Mantle. Like, the list goes on and on and on and on. So, again, good for Aaron Judge. He gets a lot of money. Good for the Yankees. They get to keep their franchise player without the fans burning down the stadium. So, Brian Cashman and Steinbrenner's son, they get to live another day. Moving away from baseball, you know what it's time to talk about, people. It is time to talk about the weekly recap, the football recap.
Dude, I've been looking forward to this. I've been looking forward to just getting it off my mind.
I have a confession to make to everyone out there. I was beginning to get a little jealous of Cameron these last couple weeks, and I'll tell you why. The Miami Dolphins, and listen, I'm not here to dog on the Dolphins. I thought they played hard. It's a tough game to win. We'll talk about that in a sec. I thought the Eagles were playing so below themselves over the last number of weeks, and I was watching Miami really just play up to their capabilities, blowing out the Houston Texans and not letting them really hang with them, all this, that, and the other. Sunday completely, completely made me do a 180 on how I was feeling about the season. The Philadelphia Eagles welcomed in the Tennessee Titans. Now, I didn't think the Titans were going to win that game, but I thought, oh, this is going to be one of those dogfights. It's going to go to the end. Like, who the hell knows what's going to happen? Hopefully they don't make big mistakes. And the Eagles took this team that is known to be the bully team, the we're going to push back team, and they pushed them into the ground, and then they dropped a freaking swing set on them and then lit the swing set on fire and watched the bodies burn. That team was dominated in every way, shape, and form from start to finish. The Eagles left no survivors. Jalen Hurts asserted himself as an MVP favorite after that game. A.J. Brown took it to his former team. Miles Sanders had another touchdown. Devontae Smith looking like a number one receiver again. The defense, oh my goodness, the defense. 6 sacks on Ryan Tannehill, holding Derrick Henry to 30 yards. And I tell you, Cameron, after that game, there was no question about it. All I could say to myself was, that is, without question, the most impactful, powerful win of the season for the Philadelphia Eagles. They killed them.
Yeah, like, here's what I think you kind of fell victim to, and I think every fan base does it, where you start to doubt your team for whatever reason. Like, and anytime something's going really, really well, you immediately you're just like, okay, well, I don't want my team to underestimate their competition. I want them to stay focused, blah, 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 blah. So as an outsider looking into that game, there was other Eagle fans said the same exact thing you did, that they were concerned. This is a tough team. They're, you know, well-coached Mike Vrabel, and that's true. It is a tough team. That game went exactly as I thought it would.
You really thought they were just going to blow the doors off the Titans? 100%.
Because
really?
All you had to do was stop Derrick Henry for 2 drives and score on those 2 drives. Then it became Tannehill's game. That's it. All you got to do is rush 4, rush 5. That's it. You're going to frazzle that kid, and that's exactly what they did. A.J. Brown, I'm telling you, I called it to a goddamn T. I should have put money on it. I'm upset with myself that I didn't put money on it, because I'm texting a friend going back and forth saying that, and then I was just like, oh, and by the way, A.J. Brown, 2 touchdowns, guaranteed. Guaranteed. What'd he do? 2 touchdowns.
And I'll tell you what, the second touchdown pass, the one that he just kind of cat. Well, so I was listening to Merle Reese as it was happening. I had the game on, and I was listening to the WIP.
That's how, and I hear, for those out there, that's how you should watch Eagles game, by the way. Mute the TV, put on Merle Reese.
As long as it's synced up. It used to be a lot more synced than it actually is today. But the best part was that when A.J. Brown makes that touchdown catch, Mike Quick, who is the Eagles color commentator, for those who may not know, says, they got to get these boys in the weight room. Because A.J. Brown was just toying with these defenders all day. The first touchdown pass, the guy bites on a double from A.J. Brown, smacks right into Brown, and then he's the one that's hurt while Brown just walks into the end zone for a touchdown. It's fine. I like the fact that as an outsider, you looked in that game and go, Philly, I'm not even worried about.
Because I had no emotion involved. I'm just looking at it just like analytically. I'm like, dude, there's no, like, this is – why am I even here? Why are we even here right now?
Can I make a confession about watching Eagles games? I think you'll find this funny.
I will.
I don't celebrate touchdowns anymore. I don't. I just don't. Like, I get certainly mad when we're not doing well, but when the first touchdown happened to Devontae Smith, I watched him and was like, get in. All right. 7-0.
Yep.
I go back to, like, I'm texting a friend. I look up. I see, like, you know, they get the 4th and 7. I was freaking out when they let Ryan Tannehill run. I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Everyone forgets that this guy actually has legs and can move around a little bit.
Literally,
how does everyone always forget this about Ryan Tannehill?
I said the same thing. I said the same because I was as he did it, I was just like, how? You can't let him do that. I was like, dude, every announcer, every game you ever watch, they always bring it up. Oh, he was a wide receiver at Texas A&M. It's guaranteed to bring up.
He was a wide receiver!
Like, it's guaranteed to be brought up every single game that he's in. So I was just like, dude, come on. You know my man's got legs. You know he's going to do that.
And
he's going to run all over you.
I wanted to mention it. Treylon Burks, what a phenomenal catch he makes in the end zone to tie up the game. He takes a licking from Marcus Epps. Illegal hit up high. Didn't think it was malicious. It's just one of those things where you can't do that. You got to be able to let up a little bit.
No, I agree.
He holds on a well-deserved touchdown for Treylon Burks. Eagles come right back down the field. Bing, bang, boom. It's 14-7. And again, I look at the touchdown to Brown, just like, all right, well, there's a flag. So either A.J. Brown straight up wrestled someone to the ground. There was either an illegal pick play as to why he was so wide open. And then I saw the replay. And again, like, not celebrating, I'm just like, well, that's defense. He ran into him, so that's definitely illegal contact. Then the phenomenal touchdown pass to A.J. Brown. Again, I just see it. I looked up. I see him catch it. I'm just like, all right, touchdown, got it. I can't celebrate touchdowns anymore because I'm either so stressed out about these games that I'm not allowing myself to enjoy the Eagles right now, or I'm just expecting them to win these games outright, and I'm not freaking out when they do or don't.
Yeah.
Well, I'm definitely freaking out when they don't.
Yeah, you freak out if they don't. Yeah, that's pretty much what I went through this weekend. But yeah, A.J. Brown's – I mean, he should have won Rookie of the Year when he when he was there.
He should have won.
Yeah, Kyler Murray got it. Kyler Murray got it, and I don't think Kyler Murray should have got it, to be honest with you. AJ Brown was putting up a ridiculous year that year, and he continues to do it, man. I mean, he's one of those guys who, even when he's covered, he's not covered. Doesn't matter. You can put two guys on him. Even when he's covered, he's not covered. He's so hungry. He's so competitive, and he's incredibly strong and athletic. He's the perfect wide receiver. He's a perfectly built wide receiver.
I want to give a big shout out to Jordan Davis, because when that guy came back, you could tell it made such a difference on the defensive line. The defensive line played so much. That was one of the best games the defensive line has played all year. And this game cost John Robinson his job. The Titans were just like, all right, you know what? I can't take this anymore. Get out. You're done.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Like, dude, midseason, it's not even a bad season net, technically. They're still the lead of the AFC South.
They're going to win their division. They're going to go to the playoffs. I mean, they're not going to win the AFC. Dude. They don't have a chance in
AFC. No. But they're the AFC South. They're already in, pretty much. I mean, Colts are the next team up. It's a joke. So, like, it's not like the team's terrible, but they got rid of that guy. The owner was just like, you got rid of that guy? Number 11? You got rid of number 11. Yeah, okay.
I think him and Vrabel were both like, what the hell, man? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So, and then the Colts, who were just recipients of one of the worst fourth quarters in NFL history to be outscored 33-0 in Dallas.
Yeah.
Four possessions in the fourth quarter. All four were turnovers.
Yeah.
Can't happen.
Yeah.
So now let's shift gears. Let's quickly talk about, before we get to what else is happening around football right now, let's talk about the Miami Dolphins. Game couldn't have started better for the Dolphins. Out the gate, touchdown pass from Tua, and you're thinking, oh my God, they're going to take it to the San Francisco 49ers. That's what I was sitting there thinking. I'm like, they're going to do it. They're going to beat up on the 49ers today.
See, there's that difference, again, like where you're watching it just not analytic, like more analytically, not emotionally. You're just like, holy shit, like that's pretty wild. I'm watching it emotionally, and I'm just going, oh, fuck. I'm like, they're going to take their foot off the gas. They're going to start getting comfortable. They're going to start getting comfortable. And so, here's my take of the game. I thought the defense played well, right? I think Purdy didn't play great, but he didn't need to. All he needed to do was get the ball into the hands of his weapons, and he did that really well. He got it to Christian McCaffrey. He got it to Deebo Samuel. He got it to George Kittle. He got it to Brandon Ayuk. He didn't throw the ball beyond 10, 15 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. Most times he threw it, usually a lot of screen passes, a lot of check downs, a lot of stuff like that. It's a well-run offense. And he played it well. He ran it well. It's very good for him. What frustrated me the most was that the offensive line played well. An injured Miami Dolphins offensive line played well against a San Francisco 49ers defensive line. But that's why it frustrated me. Tua's back there. He's got 3 seconds at certain points, which is more time than he usually gets. And he's overthrowing receivers. He's underthrowing receivers. He's throwing as he's getting hit, just getting rid of the ball. Tua lost them that game. And Tua blew his MVP candidacy in that game, in my opinion. Because it's him, Mahomes, and Hurts. And to me, Tua and Hurts, they had to be absolutely perfect in order to beat Mahomes. I think Mahomes is the media's boy right now. It's the NFL's boy right now. He's proving that he can do it without Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs are still the Chiefs, despite the fact that there's been a lot of staff changes. And it's because of Patrick Mahomes. So to me, Hurts and Tua have always been doing this uphill battle the last couple of weeks, but they've been doing it. Hurts still looks great. He's still in the fight. But now that Tua did that, played that poorly, I think he's out. I'm not angry with him. I was disappointed in the game. I think he'll be able to bounce back. But I'm not going to sit here and lie and say, oh, you know, Tua was great. He wasn't. He lost them the game. Tua lost them the game. You can't have Jaylen Waddle wide open with a 20-yard diameter and overthrow him four times throughout the game. Mm-hmm. It can't happen. Well, the only time he looked like he was on it was the beginning of that fourth quarter, that one drive where he dropped that 46-yard dime to Tyreek Hill, and that was a beautiful, perfect pass. That whole drive was just slicing and dicing the defense, as we've seen all year, and there were only two scores out of it. It could have been done. But then he's getting hit the next drive, throws the ball up in a panic, or fumbled the ball in a panic, and that was it. They lost it. They completely lost
it. Well, here's the thing. So, with 14:28 to go in the fourth quarter, it was 23-17. And I think that there were probably a lot of nervous stomachs in that San Francisco stadium thinking, oh, my God, this Purdy guy is not, like, seasoned. If we have to punt, good chance Miami might take the ball right back down the field and score it. What I think really hurt you guys, giving them just enough to allow Robbie Gould to hit that 48-yard field goal, which made it 26-17. When they hit that, that's when I was thinking, I think the Niners are going to pull away with this. And obviously what comes next are obviously the turnovers, the flurry of turnovers that really put the game away. But I really do contend that if they get that stop and they're able to get the ball back down by six, and this is a huge game of what-ifs, you just never know, because I could easily be wrong about it. Maybe I'm right about it. I think that ultimately, while I do agree that Tua did not perform to the way that he's been playing all season, I would also say to you, Cameron, look at the growth of this guy for a second.
Oh, yeah.
Because 18 of 33 for 290 yards, two touchdowns and two interceptions, I think. Last year, I think the Dolphins fans would have been, like, ecstatic that that's what he was putting up. Like, thinking, oh, my God, see, he's growing. This year, that's, like, the bar, the low bar of what he is.
It was his worst game all season, hands down. Not even close. Not even close, his worst game all season. Yeah, like,
and it's
not
the first time that the Dolphins looked mortal with him on the football field.
Yeah. Like, I'm not worried about him longevity-wise or anything like that. I'm not going to sit here and say, like, oh, you know, all the critics were right and all that crap. He had a bad game. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen. You're going to have bad games. It is what it is. I think another big thing, too, was this is Mike McDaniel's former team. I'm sure there were a lot of nerves going into it with that, and I think a big thing is when Tua went from a coach in Brian Flores, who, as we now know, which I was mistaken about, was that they didn't get along. Brian Flores didn't seem to like him, didn't really do him any favors. Things were not great in that locker room between the two of them for whatever reason. I'm not sure why Brian Flores hated the guy so much.
I don't know if we'll ever really know the truth behind that, but it is weird, to say the least.
It is. And then to go from that to Mike McDaniel, who his first hour hired as the Miami Dolphins head coach, he video calls Tua and starts telling him all the things that he loves about him and he loves about his game and all the things that he wants to add on to and help him with and all this stuff. And then 2 weeks into knowing each other, he's at a luau with Tua, and he just went above and beyond out of his way to let Tua know that, hey, you're my guy, I have your back, I'm going to be here for you. And I think a lot of that pressure was on Tua, where he has this guy who has his back for the first time in the NFL. He has a head coach that absolutely has his back, that believes in him 100%, that has put everything into him, and he wants to deliver for that guy. And I think a lot of that pressure came on to him, and it got the best of him, which you can't let that happen. But that's something that can be learned. That's something that through experience you'll be able to get through. I'm not worried longevity-wise. I was very, very frustrated Sunday. I compartmentalized it. I think they're going to be fine. I think they're going to win on Sunday night, so I'm not... It is what it is.
For the record, Mike McDaniel is my number two for Coach of the Year. For me, it's Sirianni, McDaniel, and then Dable. Because I think Brian Dable's done an amazing job. And Pete Carroll should be in that conversation as well.
Pete Carroll, Rob Saleh, another one with the Jets. What he's been able to do with the Jets.
I want to see how the Jets finish first before I give it to Rob Saleh. But Rob Saleh has done a good job this year for sure.
Yeah.
Other scores, other big storylines around the league. Obviously, got to talk about the game of the week, Chiefs-Bengals. Real quick, not much to say other than, like, that game was phenomenal. That was one of the best games I've seen all year.
Dude, it's just...
Joe Burrow, I was wrong. You want to talk about being wrong? I said at the beginning of the season, the Bengals are not going to make the playoffs. I thought that they didn't have really that great of a team going into the playoffs. I thought that Joe Burrow had caught fire at the right time, thinking that they're not going to be able to repeat that going into year three for him. I was not only so wrong about that, but... the fact that that team was able to win again against the Kansas City Chiefs, if I'm Andy Reid, if I'm Patrick Mahomes, I'm thinking to myself, oh, God, please let us play the Bills in the AFC Championship game. I don't want to see the Cincinnati Bengals again.
No.
I don't want to see them.
Agreed. And let me tell you something right now. Joe Burrow didn't catch fire. Joe Burrow is the fire. That kid is unbelievable.
He is unbelievable. He really is unbelievable.
Dude, every time he... when he plays against the toughest competition, back through college, he just elevates. He elevates. He just continues to elevate whenever he's going against certain competition. And yeah, he has bad games here and there, but they're usually against teams that really don't matter. They aren't that great. He kind of plays below their level, but all of a sudden you put him under the lights. You put him against the highest level possible. He rises above it every time. He has yet to not do it, which is insane. It's absolutely insane. Whenever people have asked me a couple times, if you're going to start a franchise, right? Let's say you're starting that you're redrafting everything. You're on your team. You're a GM of your team. Every player is available. Who's your number one first overall pick? Mine's Joe Burrow every time because he's young.
For me, it's either Burrow or it's either Burrow, Mahomes, or Allen for me. It's
yes.
Like those three are just unbelievable.
I would say one of those three because they're all young, but Burrow's the youngest. I think he's a better pure passer than Josh Allen at points in terms, and I think he's a better football IQ at certain points as well.
Well, you know what? Here's the throw that made it for me. It's 3rd and 11, and Burrow takes that horrible sack going into the 2-minute warning. Like the one thing you couldn't do was take a sack in that situation, and he does. So it's 3rd and 11. If you kick a field goal, you only make it 30-24, and you give Patrick Mahomes more than enough time to drive back down the field and score a touchdown to win the game. It's 3rd and 11, and he threads the needle to, I think it was T. Higgins. It was either T. Higgins or Tyler Boyd to get that first down to end the game. How many times have we seen quarterbacks, good or bad, not get that first down, they settle for three, and the other guy comes right back down the field, wins the game like that? Joe Burrow said, this game is over. I don't want it to go on anymore, therefore it will not. He has been as clutch as you could ask a player to be during his time in the NFL. He's a guy that recovered from an ACL injury in his rookie year, and then in his year two, he goes on and makes the freaking Super Bowl. And if not for an injury in that game and the Cincinnati Bengals line getting destroyed, he probably wins that game over the Rams. So,
yeah,
I was so wrong about the Cincinnati Bengals. I so owe an apology to the Cincinnati Bengals because I doubted y'all, and you guys are just the freaking best.
Yeah.
There's no other way about it. But
and now that Lamar Jackson's out, it's AFC North's
so
theirs.
So that's exactly where I was going next. Lamar Jackson will be out undetermined amount of time. They said 1 to 3 weeks is like the timeline. Could be longer, could be short. Like, who the hell knows? So with them out, that actually now puts their playoff risks or playoff chances in serious doubt for mm-hmm. a little bit, because if they start losing, and they have a problem, they barely beat the Broncos. Giants and Commanders tying. That's not a big storyline. I just thought that was funny. I thought I'd bring it up. It's just funny to me.
There's nothing more that I hate. Nothing that I hate more in football than a goddamn tie. Nothing.
It's mildly amusing the first time it happens. You're like, oh my God, we haven't seen those in a while. And then when it happens again, you're like, this should not be a rule.
Yeah.
Just keep playing.
If there's two in one season, it's disgusting. I'm disgusted.
Deshaun Watson made his highly anticipated return after sexually assaulting all those women. And he went 12 of 22 for 131 yards, no touchdowns and an interception. I'm not going to dog on the guy for his performance and everything because I expected him to suck not having played football in like a year and a half almost.
Yeah.
But I just want to make it clear, Deshaun Watson shouldn't be playing football, and it's kind of ridiculous that he is. So I'm just going to point that out there. I hope that the contract that the Browns signed him to blows up in their faces. I hope that the Browns continue to be a laughingstock, and I hope Deshaun Watson finds himself out of the league in no time. Fuck that guy.
Yeah, I feel bad for the genuine Brown fans, right, who are like genuinely good people who didn't want Deshaun Watson, because I know they're out there. And those people have been suffering for decades, and it's like now they have to have this disgusting pimple on their team's history too. It's just, it's a shame. I feel bad for those people. Hang in there. You know, there's other franchises. You know, there's bandwagons.
I hear Baker Mayfield's on the market if you guys want to sign him.
He's not.
Who'd he get signed by?
The Rams. Because that's going to make a world of
difference. Why? If anything, the Niners would have at least made sense.
Because, dude, when you give away 800 first-round picks, you have to win more than one Super Bowl. So now they've backed themselves into this corner. They're super desperate. Matt Stafford goes down. They're like, all right, well, we got to have somebody who can at least throw the ball. And they're like, well, okay, well, Baker kind of can. Get him over here, I guess. It's not going to make any difference.
They're 3-9. I mean, whatever. Listen, whatever. Right. It's they're the worst defending Super Bowl champions like of all time. I can't think of a worse team.
Talk about a Super Bowl hangover. This is the worst I've ever seen. The worst I've ever seen.
I know. It's
in recent memory.
Like someone's got to get them some coffee. It's right. just ridiculous.
Dude, it's bad.
And then also going around the league, other games that happened, Justin Herbert once again coming up short. Raiders beat the Chargers. Cowboys destroyed the Colts. And then I'm glad they lost, but New Orleans. Like, what part of don't give Tom Brady a single chance do you guys not understand? Why? No, and it's not just them. I'm not just trying to pick on the New Orleans Saints. Every team that ever lived, how many times we got to say it? Do not give that man a chance. If it's fourth, okay, if you're winning against Tom Brady and it's like 13-3 in the fourth quarter and you're faced with like a 4th-and-7 from like inside the red zone, go for it. Try and get the first down because you need a touchdown. You only beat that man when it's 48-0 and there's no time left on the clock.
Yeah.
That is the only way you can beat him.
Yeah.
You give him a sliver of life, he will rip your heart out like Giselle ripped his out.
Yeah. No, I agreed. Like he looked. And it's annoying because, you know, I've admitted Brady's the best of all time. I've admitted it. He's unbelievable. He's always been unbelievable. He looked like shit that game. He looked like shit.
He looks bad for 3.5 quarters. Dude.
Yeah.
And then the fourth quarter comes around. Last drive has a chance to win. And every team always does it. They drop into the most protective zone D. And it Oh my gosh, if the Eagles play the Buccaneers in the playoffs and Tom Brady has a chance to win at the end, I already know my goose is cooked. I don't trust Jonathan Gannon to adjust to that.
No.
I don't trust him to not fall into prevent defense.
No, dude, Gannon is playing zone. Gannon's playing zone when Tannehill's throwing the ball. Like nonstop.
We gotta be careful. Ryan Tannehill, known gunslinger Tannehill.
He might fling it 60 yards. Like
dude. With no receivers to throw the ball to.
Yeah, so it's like, dude, it's bad. And, yeah, it's annoying because it's just like, dude, Brady has not thrown an accurate ball beyond 30 yards all season. Why? What are we doing here? Blitz him. Just blitz him. He can't run. He's 80 years old. He can't run. His offensive line is weak. He can't run. You have a good defense. Rush him. Just get in there. Get in his face, dude. What are we doing here? Yeah, it's whatever.
Are you, I just wanted to point this out. I don't know if you've noticed it. Mike Evans is probably having, I would think, his worst season as a pro at this point. Yeah, definitely.
He's not playing well. I didn't even think he was playing on Monday night because I didn't see him for the first like half. I felt like I thought it was all Godwin.
I feel like that because of how limited Brady is at this point. Godwin and Evans can't be as effective as they want to be because Brady's just he can't throw the ball with any confidence down the field. It's kind of like how with Big Ben last year with the Steelers, he could not throw the ball down the field. He couldn't. He just couldn't. So that's what's happening around your football league. Eagles play the Giants this week. Who you guys got?
Chargers.
Oh, that's right. Duh. What am I thinking? Going to L.A.
Sorry, it happens to the best of us. Sorry.
You'll win. I'm not like Justin Herbert is a good quarterback, but like that
yeah, no, I think they'll win. I don't think it'll be because Justin Herbert didn't play well. I think he's gonna play well. I don't think it's ever because of him. I feel bad for the guy because
they got to fire that head coach. Brandon Staley is not a very good head coach.
Like I look at Tennessee and I see a team that's well coached. Right, like Mike Vrabel I think is a very very good coach. Brian Dable, mm-hmm. New York Giants, very very good coach. The Chargers, the opposite. It's the opposite situation. All the talent in the world. Granted, there's a lot of injuries this season, which doesn't help anything, but. Even last year, even the year before that, they're coached terribly, man. How do you have the best rookie young quarterback in recent history, let's be real, except for maybe, you know, Joe Burrow, I guess, but even then, the rookie season, Burrow was hurt, but still, Herbert's looking lights out is my goddamn point. He's putting up ridiculous stats, ridiculous numbers. How has he not been in the playoffs yet?
I think that, one, they're not letting him, well, for one, they make him throw... They call for all these like short passes, screen plays, all that stuff, whatever you want to call it. And the problem is that the Chargers' wide receivers aren't good enough to create the separation needed for like short little throws. Their blocking schemes suck. Like, do the Chargers even have a running game? Like, I know Austin Eckler's great, but like, isn't Austin Eckler better used out of the backfield than he is actually, like, you know, with running the ball? Isn't he a better pass catcher out of the backfield?
I haven't watched him enough this season, but, I mean, that's... When I think of him, that's what I think of.
That's where all, like, that's where you see all the highlights of him catching the ball out of the backfield.
Yeah.
So, at this point, like, with Herbert, I know he's a great talent. And, like, Chargers fans have nothing to worry about. Like, Herbert's a great talent.
Yeah.
You gotta get yourself a new head coach. Like, you can't. This is unacceptable.
That's all there is to it. Seriously.
Like, I would like to think that Dean Spanos is, you know, not going to allow this to continue, because if he wants to ever win a Super Bowl and endear himself to Los Angeles, how you don't do it is with just the most boring offense with one of the most exciting quarterbacks in the game. He's just not how you'd win. Before we wrap up, Cameron, I just want to talk about some pet peeves. Pet peeves that I really got to get off my chest.
Okay. Is it sports related or is this just you?
No, it's not sports related.
Okay, I love it already.
When you are checking out at a line, buying groceries, buying whatever, there is no excuse for you to keep your head down in your phone and not even look up at the cashier as they're trying to, you know, not even necessarily make small conversation with you, but just trying to, like, check things out, like, you know, they're still, you know, doing something for you. You could show them the human decency of looking up from your phone and making eye contact with them.
Yeah.
I don't think it's too much to ask. So when I was faced in this situation today, and the person whose name I don't care to know, just couldn't look up from their phone, I wanted to just walk away from the register. Just wanted to walk away. It is Christmas time. Everyone's stressed out. Mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, cousins, brothers, doesn't matter who, sisters. But you know who else is stressed out? The working man, the retail man. And right now, what I need more than anything is to be treated just a shade above roboticism. I would like to just be seen as a human. So if you find yourself in a situation where you find yourself looking at your phone while you're being checked out at a checkout line, if you go to Giant later tonight and you have the honor of being checked out by one of their fine cashiers, do me a favor. Make some damn eye contact. It is so disrespectful not to do that. And also, while I'm on the subject, I just want to make something perfectly clear as well. You didn't wait in line for 20 minutes. That's a lie. You didn't wait in line 20 minutes. It's a lie. You waited in line probably 7 or 8 minutes. Not saying that that's not an investment of time, but it's not 20. Don't lie to me. And more importantly, don't say I don't care about my job, because I assure you, I don't get up early in the morning because I don't care. It's just, had to get that off my chest.
Yeah, so to you know, speak on that a little bit, I guess, one, like the whole 20-minute in line thing, one, like you said, you didn't. Second of all, no one gives a shit.
No one cares.
No one cares that you spend 20 minutes in line. You're at a store in December. You're going to wait. And the other thing is, like, every place is understaffed in this country right now. It is what it is. Like, just you calm down.
I
take your life problems and take them out on something or somebody else in a much healthier way.
Go punch wind for all I care.
Right.
Can you imagine, like, saying that to, like, a Ukrainian? They're just like, oh, you're having a bad day? Yeah, me too. I was in line for 20 minutes at a store. And they're just like, yeah, a missile went through my house and, you know, destroyed everything I ever loved and owned. Yeah, but I bet it didn't take 20 minutes.
Right. Yeah, and the other thing is, dude, like,
what are we talking about?
I think the lack of human interaction is one of my bigger pet peeves, not just in retail lines, but just anywhere.
Oh, it's just so annoying.
Just the lack of, I don't know. I have a whole long thought process on the lack of human interaction and how damaging it can be to society and people, and I think it lends itself to a lot of the loneliness that a lot of people feel now, and the depression that a lot of people feel. And I think a lot of that is just because there's no human interaction ever. You're constantly involved in your screen, and I don't know. I feel like I'm sounding like an old man.
It is sad.
It is what it is.
It is sad. And by the way, you, the listener, as you listen on your phone, and you might be texting someone as you listen to this, learn to look up. Learn to look up and say hello to your friends and neighbors and family members. for the Fly Guys podcast. My name is Justin Goodhart. This has been Cameron Klein. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Fly Guys Podcast. Myself at Goodhart Justin. Cameron, of course, at CameronKlein15. Be happy, be healthy. Fly Eagles fly, fins up. And as always, treat your cashiers with respect.